You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 369. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Despite our whimsical intro, this is not a whimsical week at Punk News. I was saying to the other guys, past couple of weeks, Punk News has basically been the police blotter. First of all, we're here with Dynamite Adam White, managing editor Adam White. Adam White, man, have we been the police blotter with all these arrests and everything lately, or what? What is the deal?
Everyone's fucking misbehaving all the time, John. I don't know what it is. It's like all this rock and roll music has got everyone all squirrely, and they're just committing crimes and being bad to each other. And it's I don't know. We should all. This never happened during the emo days, John. Everything was chill. Everyone was sad and lethargic, and Adam, this didn't happen.
That's an excellent point, because in the early LA punk scene, people were getting arrested all the time for fighting, drugs, breaking into things. Is the recent spate of arrests due to genre, what's the word I'm looking for, trends, if you will?
No, not at all. I actually had an interview that I did the other night with a guy that had been playing in punk bands since, I want to say, like 90, since like 93. 93, 94, probably earlier. And this came up because we were talking about...
Can you say his name, or is it top secret?
No. I guess I can say his name. So I was doing an interview with a guy named Steve Stumble. So Steve is the lead singer of a band from St. Catharines called The Lucky Ones. And in the past bands that he's been in, they like his band opened for Rancid's Outcome the Wolves tour when that was around, which would have been like 95, I think.
Yes.
And I mean, he's been involved as a promoter and a label owner in the Niagara area for my entire life. But his bands have like played a lot of shows with your Rancid's and your Dropkick Murphys and your, you know, those kinds of bands, right? Like a street punky kind of thing. So we were just chatting because I was interviewing him, but they had a record that came out. When I say chatting, I meant like it was an interview, but we sat around and drank beer for 2.5 hours. So I don't know what you want to call
that. That's a long interview, dude.
You don't go to a bar and sit down with Steve Stumble and not keep drinking beer. In any case, came up later in our interview there just about, you know, a guy his age that's been in the scene for a while, has been doing this for a while. So, I mean, he's about like 6-7 years older than me. He's probably about 42 or something like that. Just like, what's his read on everything? Like, what's the world feel like to him right now? And it's funny because he echoed like a lot of what we've talked about on this podcast, where he was saying that just like the hypersensitivity of everyone about being offended all the time is just disheartening. It, you know, it really makes you question what you're doing, especially when you're a band like one of his bands, which is just full of like, you know, purposefully goofy and offensive shit. Like his bands have all kinds of like, you know, like Toy Dolls, Dickies kind of lyrics and stuff like that. Like they're, you know, dumb punk drinking songs and stuff like that. So you look at, say, what happened to the Dickies on the Warped Tour recently, and that environment is, you know, pretty off-putting for, you know, someone like him that's been in a world where punk was just being like offensive and dumb for so many years. So we were having that conversation, and he mentioned that, you know, without the internet, so much of this stuff wasn't talked about. And if you would have had, you know, if you would have had people out with their phones and, you know, reporting back onto Tumblr and onto Facebook and everything else, what happened at shows back in like, you know, 94, 95, or even a little bit later, so much of that stuff would have got everyone in trouble. but he's like, I'm so glad that we didn't have that in our era, because, you know, there was definitely some point during some show where one of his bass players just, like, you know, fucking clonked someone out in the crowd and got in a fight. And back then it just became just like some weird scene lore, like, you know, a story from this or that show that happened. But these days, you know, that's not the same level, I think, of what, say, like, Ben Weasel got in shit for. But, you know, it's say not too far off from what Fat Mike almost got in trouble for at one point when he kicked that kid that came on stage, right? Where all of a sudden it's like all this, like, routine dumb punk show violence has the potential to blow up way more than it did. So, John, I don't think it has anything to do with genre. I think it has to do with the ability to amplify these things.
We'll actually get into the technology amplifying controversy in a minute, but we're also here with Stafford Sean. Stafford Sean is doing a last minute replacement for Tricky Ricky, who doesn't know how to work a schedule. It was supposed to be Tricky Ricky tonight, but instead it's Stafford Sean, because Tricky Ricky is another between Wednesday and Thursday. And I'm glad Stafford Sean's on for two reasons. First of all, Stafford Sean, have you ever been arrested?
No, I have not.
Do you plan on getting arrested?
Not in the immediate future.
Good. Stay out. Stay free, as Mick Jones said. But the reason I'm glad that Stafford Sean's on is, Adam, like, you agree that Stafford Sean seems like a pretty laid-back guy. He doesn't live in California, but he's kind of got a California surfer dude vibe to him, or at least a little bit. You know what I'm saying? He's pretty chill.
He's young. Like, the gravity hasn't had as many years to, you know, pull at his various bits and ravage him.
Well, then
that's why people get angrier. It's just gravity.
Well, the point being is I feel another young member of our staff, Tricky Ricky, I feel he's getting angrier, and I feel he's existing in a ball of blind rage lately. And I understand being angry as a young man, and I'm angry myself at certain things, but I feel as though with Ricky there's just anger but with no root cause. Do you agree, Stafford Sean and Adam White? And do we need to stage an intervention? And I'm glad Stafford Sean's here, because I feel as though, much like an X-Man, I believe it's Havoc, but I could be wrong, Stafford Sean can absorb the anger when we stage our intervention and neutralize Ricky, and we can get him back on track. I feel as though Ricky might be going to some dark places, is what I'm saying.
I mean, it makes for an interesting show, I'll say that.
I mean, Ricky might be angry with you.
Well, why is that?
I don't know if he's angry at life.
You don't sense what I'm saying.
I mean, last episode, that Ricky is a coiled up ball of rage ready to explode and everyone. I mean, that's really my greatest dream, but I don't know if there's any actual evidence of that.
Well, we'll find out, I guess, in the next episode or two. Anyways, let's reach into the mailbag. We got some cool mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from an unnamed sender, and I can't really read his email address, but here's what he says. Punk News Podcast, I love listening to the show. I went to a house show last week, and it was $9 to get inside. I was fine with that, but I noticed that house shows around my area in Arizona used to be $5 or $6, and now they're $8, $9, or even $10. What do you think is the proper price for a house show? What do you think is the proper price for a bar show? And what do you think is the proper price for a proper venue show?
I don't think I've ever been to a house show that wasn't free.
Oh, I've had Philadelphia. Yeah. It had tons of them. Usually like $5 or $6.
I definitely had ones where it's like a suggested donation, but yeah, most of the house shows that I mean, actually all of them like haven't had like a hard price.
Wait, you've gone to a suggested donation show and not given anything? I thought
I usually give the suggested donation if I've got it on me, but.
But you've gone to shows and you've paid less than the suggested donation.
No. Usually I give the suggested donation.
Have you ever given less?
There is one. There usually isn't one, actually, to be honest. I've only been to a couple, but yeah, I guess where I have been, unless like I just don't have the cash on me. Yeah. I'd see a problem with that, but yeah, I don't really have any frame of reference, to be honest. I mean, I guess I do in some sense, but, I realized people also need to make money. So that's not like sustainable to just say all house shows need to be free.
I think the answer to this might be different from a depending on how easy it is to get certain amounts of change, and this is going to be a very Canadian answer to this, like I wouldn't have a problem paying more than, you know, this like crazy low house show price to go to a house show, if only because, and to come back to what we've discussed on this show a bunch before, like punk bands for some reason are just like expected to work for nothing. So I'm okay paying to go into a show. And in my mind, like $5 is of course fine, but $5 seems like dirt cheap. $10 I would totally be fine with, even if it was a house show, right? I'm okay. Someone's coming there to perform and entertain me. That's worth $10 in my life. What would actually drive me nuts would be like $6.
That's a weird answer, Adam. I'm sorry.
No, and it would, because, and this is a Canadian answer to this. Everything smaller than a $5 in Canada is a fucking coin. So I'll rarely ever even have a $5 bill on me, but I'll more likely have a $5 bill on me than I'll have a pocket full of toonies or something, right? Like we don't have like dollar singles. So I think that in the States, it's way less of a big deal to go to a house show or something and give someone $6 because it's, you know, it's two paper bills out of your wallet. You know, believe it or not, even though we like our coin money here, we don't actually like carrying it around. It exists to sit in a little cup in your car so that when you go through the Tim Hortons line, you can buy coffees. It does not, you don't want to, you know, have like a big fucking pouch like a squirrel with his cheek full of nuts, you know, full of coins so you can go anywhere. So, and if I'm running that show and I'm the door I'm the door person at that show, it's way easier to interact with people with, you know, fives, tens, twenties than it would be with a big leprechaun cauldron full of little gold coins that you can give out to everyone. No one wants to do that. It's the pain in the ass. So I say nothing that is below, the common denominator of $5 is what I would say.
I'm imagining that Canada is like medieval England, and that like people carry around sacks of coins for their money, you know.
Well, but there's all sorts of consequences to that. Like apparently, I don't actually know this because I'm a little boy, but if you were to go to a strip club, you're not like, you know, you're not
What do you do in Canadian dollar bills anywhere? What do you do in Canadian strip clubs?
I don't know. It's weird because like I actually live like literally two or three blocks from like the CD strip club district of Niagara Falls. So they're all just around here. I take note every time there's like a shooting at one of them at 4 a.m. But I've never actually been into any of them. So I don't know how that interaction works.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, just so I don't know, but us not having dollar bills, kind of, you know, it changes the, at least the stereotypical
that
strip club interaction there. I don't know.
This will be a conversation for a later time, but strip clubs are very controversial within the punk scene, because is it sex workers' rights and that it's cool and fair? Or is it objectification of women? Or is it both? We'll talk about that on a later episode. To answer the house show question, house shows, $8 to $12, $12 if it's like a touring band or a band that people want to see or a band with some legacy. If not, $8 to $10 is fair. Bar show, $15, maybe $20 if it's a big band. Theater show, $30 to $60. That's what I'm saying. That's the right price.
I'm okay with that pricing. That sounds fine.
So you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org and write in two reasons. Is Tricky Ricky a boiling ball of rage that is bound to erupt? And also, strip clubs, objectification of women, or promoting sex workers' rights? Which is it? You let us know. Podcast at punknews.org. Let's play a song, and then, let's play a song. And now, actually, Stanford Sean, you went to Riot. Speaking of sex workers, you went to Riot Fest. How'd you do at Riot Fest? What happened? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, first of all, I'm a bit confused by that connection there.
It's called the seg. That's how you say it. Yeah. They move into the next topic gracefully.
I guess that is technically. It was fantastic. This is, I just got for frame of reference. That was just a couple days ago. On Sunday. And obviously the big talking point, like the big news about that was the Jawbreaker reunion. And they were incredible. They really kind of lived up to the hype. But I feel like they were completely overshadowed earlier that day by Cat and Jazz, which was definitely the best set of the weekend. I'm not sure how, I know they don't really tour. They mostly just do one-off festivals, but if you do get the chance to see Cat and Jazz, definitely a show worth seeing. Tim was constantly throwing his tambourine out into the crowd, even when like he would be like, I'm going to need this back in 5 seconds. And then he would just throw it out into the crowd and expect somebody to throw it right back immediately. Towards the end, he tried to stuff the microphone down his pants and he got it stuck. It just overall, I'm not sure if he was drunk or just generally entertaining or just maybe a little bit of both. But yeah, he was quite the character. La Armada is a local band that I'd been wanting to see for a while. They were great, had a lot of energy, great Chicago hardcore band. I was surprised to see them on the lineup just because they're like pretty small band. But I'd been meaning to see them and they did not disappoint. And then like other highlights being Gwar at the drive-in.
How was Arms. Gwar with that? I mean, do you know a lot about Gwar or not really?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Gwar with Odorous. I saw them once without Odorous and it was okay.
Yeah, so the first time, the first Riot Fest I went to was 2013. And I kind of did, like, it wasn't enough to qualify, like, watching a Gwar show, but like maybe like 30 seconds and like walking by. And so I did get to see a little bit of Odorous performing, but I've seen Gwar twice do a full show with the new guy. And they've still got like a lot of the great kind of stage gimmicks, and it's still an incredible theatrical experience. They had like this it was someone like twice the size of like, you know, an average human, this giant, I guess, kind of character thing. I think it was like somewhat of a robot, somewhat of an alien, and they like ripped its chest off, and inside it had like sentient guts. Like that was where the actual human head was.
Oh, that's Cardinal Sin. It just in case you didn't know.
Yeah. I didn't see that at the last show that they didn't, I don't think they brought him out there. But yeah, that was incredible. And of course they take the head off of it at the end of the song and sprays blood everywhere. As they do with every three songs. So yeah, Gwar is always incredible.
Did you see Danzig?
I didn't.
Sean.
Lawrence Arms were playing O Calcutta at the same time. That's probably not the answer you want to hear.
Yeah, that is not the answer because Danzig was doing Danzig 3 at the same time.
Yeah. To be completely honest, John, and I know you're not going to like hearing this, but I'm not a huge fan of Danzig stuff after the Misfits. I don't know.
I don't know how you can say that.
It's just not for me.
I don't know how you say
it. It's just not really my cup of tea.
Well, any other fun events happen at Riot Fest?
I mean, as for not fun events, I don't know. Have either of you seen Bad Brains recently?
Yeah, I saw Bad Brains about 10 years ago. I've seen HR solo about 3 times in the past 5 years. Yeah. Not that good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but the crowd was incredible. That's the one thing. If anything, like just having that platform for people to kind of all enjoy the music of Bad Brains, even if the performance itself wasn't all that much.
Did HR do like just the mumble thing?
Kind of. I think most of the audience was singing louder than him. But yeah, and I guess also. Forgot. I met up with some other some fellow punk newsers who were in town for Riot Fest. Ronaldo was there, and also he was staying. I don't think that this person actually has said their like uses their real name on Punk News, so it's Hesitation Station is his username. I'm not sure if he wants to keep that anonymous, but. Yeah, I'm gonna play a song from his band later, which it's not a secret that that's his band. So,
why don't you play a song right now?
Yeah, so I'm gonna play I've really just been loving the new singles from Telethon, which is the band of Hesitation Station, and you know, pretty strong Rosenstock vibe on these songs. I think they actually might have gotten like a producer that worked with Jeff Rosenstock, or maybe that was their last album. Yeah, but there's at least one Bond music industry connection, because they've got Laura Stevenson featured on a song. But I'm gonna play the I think the second single released from this upcoming album called Punctuation. So this is Punctuation by Telethon.
And that was Punctuation by Telethon. One last item of business that we've got to announce. We're doing it again, people. We're doing it again. This is not one of the biggies, but this is one of the middle ones. October 14 is Cassette Store Day. The United States is run by Burger Records. And basically, it's like a more fun, more whimsical record store day, in that certain stores will be carrying rare and exclusive cassettes. This year, we said, let's put out a cassette. So Punk News will be putting out Bullshit Collector, very humorously titled, which is a collection of 30 new and newish bands that we think are pretty cool. And I've mixed the tape. It's going to be out. You can go to punknews.org. You will be able to go to punknews.org to check out the tape, check out the track list, and to see where you can pick up the tape. You should go to the store to buy it if you're near a store, but if you're not near a store, you will be able to buy it online. We've got tracks from Pushing It to the Limit, Crazy in the Brains, Posers, Ellen and the Degenerates, Chodo Ghetto, DFL, The Flames, of course. I'm trying to think who else. Kicker, trying to think who else off the top of my head. Teenage Bigfoot, a lot of really cool bands. Shitty Summer, a lot of really cool bands. Rentiers, a lot of really cool bands and totally different styles. Drones, Clitorate, Connoisseur, a lot of totally different styles, and it just really flows together like really well. It's a lot of awesome new punk that you might not have heard, and that's kind of the point of this one, and that it's a lot of stuff you might not know, but it's a lot of really cool punk. Adam, I don't know if you got anything to say about it, or Stav or Sean, about Bullshit Collector. What, surprisingly, a lot of people didn't get the reference to the name.
I got it. It's a Bullshit Detector reference.
You nailed it, but Bullshit Detector by whom?
I know this, but I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
Because some people think it's a Clash reference, but it's a reference from a Clash reference, actually.
Okay. I don't know. You've stumped me on that one.
Adam White, do you know it?
I know it, John, but I'm sure I've learned it from you over the years. So of course, Bullshit Detectors from the Clash song Garage Band, and then, or Garage GarageBand.
GarageBand.
Yeah, the video game. No, it's from the Clash song GarageBand. Bullshit Detector then was it a compilation?
It's three compilations.
I forget what the actual context of it, but it was a Crass produced thing, was it not?
Crass put out three compilations. Each of them were a bunch of new bands that nobody knew about. So I said, let's do the same thing, and we'll call it Bullshit Collector because it's a collectible, which of course is anti the ethos of Crass, which I found very amusing.
You're very amused with yourself, John.
I am. Adam White, what do you think of this track list? What do you think of this tape? What do you think of Cassette Store Day? Is this good, clean fun? Or are we heathens and demons and horrible people for putting out cassette tapes instead of giving stuff away for free digitally?
I'm all for making cassette tapes just because it's just
it's so much fun for some reason.
Yeah. It's. I mean, we could of course put stuff out digitally, but putting out cassette tapes, especially because there's totally no money in it, is just like because you could argue that with say like the Record Store Day thing, like we all love records, but you know let's you know everybody take a knee. We'll talk about this, you know, mano a mano here. Like Record Store Day is about money, yeah. Right? Like you're putting out super collectible things, and fans are going to line up if fans want those things and fight their way to them. And dicks that are going to put them on eBay are going to line up and fight their way to them. And it's there to get a whole bunch of people out to the record store and to spend a bunch of money, which is fine. I'm fine with the whole thing, like on every level. You know, well, maybe not the eBay people, fuck them. But, you know, but every other level on there, I'm totally cool with. Bands make more money. Labels make more money. The record store makes more money. We get to buy records. I'm cool with all of that. Fine. But, you know, it's about money. Cassette Store Day, cassettes, even people that are into cassettes are fully aware that a cassette is stupid. So there's there's this sort of like a... Like everyone's in on the joke aspect to it, where it's there's something that's more pure there to me, because clearly no one's showing up there and making any argument about like the audio quality of a cassette, right? Like no one's arguing, oh, it's a warmer sound having it on this cassette. It's certainly not a convenience thing, especially since most people don't have cassette players readily available like they did, you know, 20 years ago. And I mean, I've heard the argument that it's a hipster thing, but I don't know. Like, I'm not seeing a lot of stereotypical like beard and flannel hipsters wandering through the downtown slinging cassettes. It just, I'm not seeing it. So it to me is just like a nerdy, dumb music nerd thing, and I'm totally fine with that.
I'll point out that Bullshit Collector, much like all the Punk News mixtapes, is mixed like a hip-hop mixtape with interludes, shout-outs, intros, and outros, and it's a constant flow. There's no breaks between songs. And I will say, Adam White and Stafford Sean, I am particularly proud of this tape and all our tapes, and that there's something special in that. It's not just here's a collection of songs. It's a collection of songs presented in a unique way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone gets the joke, but
I don't think anybody does get the joke at all, to tell you the truth.
But hey, whatever. That's their problem, not mine.
Well, listen, check it out. October 14, you can buy at your local record store. Go to the Punk News site to see where you can buy it. And if you can't buy it at your local record store, you should buy it there if you're going to buy it. But if you can't buy it at your local record store, we'll be selling it online for a very, very reasonable price. Speaking of something else that's funny, and then it's going to lead to something complete, is Canadian band. They've been around for years. And if you ask me, they're kind of Plasmatics influence. They got a little bit of a D-beat thing going. It's kind of... Uber Punks, P-U-N-K-X, except for with a very clean, almost 80s metal sound. Beyonce, of course, just released her a physical copy of her album, Lemonade. And in Europe, some copies of the yellow version of the vinyl press of Beyonce's Lemonade were pressed on the A side with the A side of Zex's Uphill Battle. So people bought the Beyonce album, put on A side, and of course it wasn't Beyonce, it was Zex, which... is one of these, I guess, pressing plant mix-ups of fame. If you go back through history, there are famous pressing mix-ups, and this is one of them. And it would have been a thing that people would delight people for future generations until we get to our next story, which ruins the whole kind of thing.
So let's put a pin in it right there before we get to the story that ruins the whole thing.
Yeah.
Was not your immediate reaction when this came out was like, that's going to be collectible as fuck.
Dude, the first thing I did when went on the Discogs to see if I could snatch one up. Well, actually, the first thing I did went on the Discogs because I was going to run out to the store and buy one, but it's only in Europe. Or I might even be Ireland or something like that. The one I saw posted on Discogs was like $6,000. But you guys keep talking, and I'll see what the value of it is right now. Because I wanted to buy one because it's interesting, and no, I would sell it. It's worth a lot of money, but I don't hold a one.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's just one of those. You always hear about, like, you know, infamous, you know, messed up copies of things that go for huge amounts of money because they were put together wrong, and it's hilarious that like of all people to be involved in this mix up, it's like the biggest pop star in the world, and then some little punk band no one's heard of from Ottawa. I mean, like, relatively speaking, no one's heard of from Ottawa. So like the whole story just seemed like this. It was a whimsical ball of rainbows, John. It was a fun story. We were all laughing. We were laughing with Zex. We were laughing with Beyonce. We were laughing with the record collectors trying to fight each other for a copy. It was great for everyone. Great fun. And then the bottom dropped out on this.
Woo. One quick thing is the record label's like, you can send it back to us for a refund or get a new one. And I'm thinking, what dumbass would do that? You know, but
I'm sure a lot of Beyonce fans, like, just, I mean, if you were just like a straight up just Beyonce fan and, you know, you come across this record with Zex and you've never heard anything like it. And it's just kind of like left field. Doesn't sound like music to you, probably.
Do you think any Beyonce fans heard it and thought it was Beyonce? Fans,
but I'm sure that there are some Beyonce fans who were just completely appalled by it and probably sent it back.
Do you think any Beyonce fans are like, wow, Beyonce's got a really interesting new direction that she's taking? one other thing that I wanted to add, what else did I want to put? I forget, doesn't matter. Anyways, Adam White, pull the rug out. Let's kill everybody's fun like we always do.
So this was great. Again, whatever I said earlier, it was you know, rainbows and everything. I mean, the other thing that made this great is that Zex is a band who's really playing up this this hair metal punk rock hybrid in their photos. Their singer's wearing what appears to be like a huge teased out like 80s hair metal kind of do. She's got some Susie Sue eye makeup on.
She got kind of a Samantha Fox thing going. Samantha Fox.
Yeah. Everyone else has various levels of giant hair and covered in spikes and studs and leather jackets and etc. So the image of them, the image, this, and for whatever reason in their band photo, at least two of the four, and I won't single out who, they look totally fucking spaced out. And so it's great when you look at this incredibly polished the image of, say, someone like Beyonce, who does not appear in public without basically like the entire staff at like Mission Control and NASA, you know, calculating, you know, everything. And then you look at these guys that are shooting for that, but they don't have those resources. They're just a bunch of dudes. So they put on all their spikes and shit and got a picture. I said just a bunch of dudes. Their singer is a girl, but you know what I mean? Like, there's the attempt at putting on the artifice of a rock show with the Zex picture compared to Beyonce that has, you know, literally $20 bazillion helping maintain that image. And just seeing the two juxtaposed against each other was just great. So the whole thing was great. Everything was fine.
We were all yucking it up, slapping each other on the back, laughing and laughing.
Then the band suddenly got dropped by their record label, which is called Magic Bullet Records, because out of the proverbial woodwork came a whole bunch of sexual assault accusations against guitarist Joe Capital Side. That is not his real last name. But Joe, I don't have his real last name in front of me, was accused of all sorts of stuff here. So I'll read a little bit from one of the articles about this, and then we'll and then I'll try to shed a little bit more light on it. So the label shared a statement noting that one of the accounts of sexual assaults that they had received in email matched, and this is the quote, information shared firsthand by Zex singer Gretchen Steele about the guitarist's behavior during their, quote, open relationship, unquote. In a phone conversation with Pitchfork, Steele said that the band was not given any advance notice from the label about the allegations referenced in the statement or the fact that they are being dropped. She also shot down any claims that she ever discussed her relationship with the guitar player with the label. So she's claiming that the label doesn't really have any. She doesn't know why they went off that. But in any case, Magic Bullet has claimed that the band has been met with routine boycotts from promoters, venues, and record stores. Here's a quote from the from Magic Bullet Records head honcho Brent Eyestone. He told Pitchfork, he said, "By Joe and Gretchen's own accounts to me, Joe would be cornered at every Ottawa show he attempted to attend and forcibly made to leave. What happened in Ottawa, it's just personal issues of people not liking each." I just mushed those two quotes together. Steele responded to that by saying, "What happened in Ottawa is just personal issues of people not liking each other. That's it. It's not anything else." So anyways, we are all of a sudden from fun goofiness land into the repeated story that we keep coming back to time and time again this year, where someone in a band is accused of some sexual impropriety on the internet, and
we don't really have a source to it.
And we don't have too much of a source. Now, this one I feel has a little bit more interesting levels of collaboration around it, in that the what makes this a little bit different of a scenario from the other times that we've seen this is that this wasn't a case of, say, someone in a well-known band suddenly having, you know, an anonymous accusation thrown at them on a Tumblr blog that blew up. What has come out about this is that Zex has been a below the radar, to say the least, kind of act. And there are definitely people from the scenes that Joe had been a part of that have posted a whole bunch of public things on Facebook and elsewhere right now, where they're saying, you know, we've been talking about this stuff for years, but no one gave a shit until all of a sudden the music world's attention was thrust upon this band. And that level of attention, that band all of a sudden coming up in, you know, in every conversation, in every major news magazine, basically because everyone wants to write about Beyonce. So because all of a sudden Zex appearing everywhere, a lot of people that had been sitting on these allegations or, you know, potentially dealing with them on that local scene level where they were, say, confronting him at shows or whatever else, they felt the need to make those voices heard given the amplification of the band otherwise. So again, we as Punk News are not passing any particular judgment on this because we don't fucking know. But that the scenario seems to be that a lot of people who are from the scene where Zex was are coming out now and saying, well, yeah, we all knew about this stuff and complained about it, but no one seemed to care too much until now. There's a public post on Facebook by a member of the band, a Halifax band called Slumlord. Her name is Severin Cavanaugh. Let's say
I would say Kavanaugh.
Severin Kavanaugh. And so she, I mean, I'm just going to just read sort of the intro to her thing here, and just to kind of give you a feel for the general tenor of what's going on here. But she said, it's time to spread this far and wide. Joe Capital Side, the guitarist of local band Zex, is a sexual predator, abuser, and much more. I have seen this firsthand for years. Zex skyrocketed to the spotlight due to a vinyl pressing error that associated them with a famous pop star a few days ago. Like clockwork, their label was sent many accounts of sexual misconduct by Joe. Anyone who has been a survivor of assault knows how horrifying it is to see their attacker praised and pictured everywhere while being told that they are a liar. This, compacted with the constant boycotts of the band over the past few years, caused their label to drop them. Someone mentioned on another post, that was fast. No, that was not fast. Since everything came to light in his immediate friend circle over 3 years ago, he has denied everything, and people have stood by, looking away, or straight up denying along with him. Dot, dot, dot. So that kind of keeps going. Again, I don't want to imply that we're necessarily taking any of these people's sides, but those are the public statements that are being made by other people and other bands that have been part of his scene. So that band I mentioned, Slumlord, the drummer of Zex was at one point the drummer of Slumlord. So that's how those two things are connected. So there's a whole big, messy thing that has come out of this. So, John,
Adam,
does this sound like the case of potential band with some seedy shit in their closet suddenly thrust into the spotlight and totally not ready for having that amount of seedy stuff out in the public? Is a case of something else? I don't know.
I like Adam saying, we're not going to pass judgment here at Punk News. And he says, John, pass judgment on this band.
John, pass judgment. Adjudicate.
Here's my... I'm not taking sides on this. I have no idea. What does continually frustrate me about these things is, not only is there not an accuser here, but they're not saying what he did. They said he abused somebody. But what does that mean? You know, what did he actually do? And I'm not saying he didn't do these things, but I'm saying we're starting to accept that even it's getting more and more vague, and that you can say, oh, this guy's a bad guy. Well, why? Oh, just because he's bad. So someone is labeled being bad just because someone says they're bad with no backup. The other side is, do you want to force sexual assault victims to come forward? Well, no, but on the other hand, you can't just be saying this guy's a bad guy because someone told me he's a bad guy. You kind of have to have more concrete stuff than that. However, that being said, you do see this a lot with people, I guess, how would I phrase this? People that are more progressive in their sexual life, I guess. And you know, there's a whole set of rules with people that, I guess, don't have a traditional sexual background, that is, they got multiple partners, the open relationships, this and that. There's a whole set of rules by which people, and you see these rules are generally agreed upon. You know, if you read like Savage Love in the AV Club, that if you're in one of these, I guess, non-traditional relationships or whatever, you should abide by these rules to make sure everyone's safe and happy. The problem is, I think in practice, is it's very hard to actually abide by these rules all the time, or not even to abide by the rules, but to make sure every party is understanding what the other party is up to and wants to do and is agreeing to and is agreeing to at that time. It's very unclear. And so that's why you get these messy situations where people say, oh, this guy's a bad guy, but they don't really have any proof. Maybe he was a bad guy, but because the relationship is so tangled and so murky, it's tough to get any proof that the guy was a bad guy because the relationship itself was so murky. But the flip side is, maybe the guy wasn't doing anything bad, but because he's doing these, you know, these, I guess, what I would call weirder things, then it's easier to say he was doing bad stuff because he was doing less traditional things in his sexual and personal life and that kind of a thing. Am I making any sense with regards to that?
Can we ever make any sense?
The other thing is, two other things is it is interesting to say, oh, we're dropping them from the label. Well, it's not like it's a major record label. I doubt they had them signed to a 7-album contract. They probably had them signed to a single album deal and then another single album deal. So dropping them from the label doesn't really mean anything, but I guess what he's saying is, I'm not going to promote them anymore. The other thing is Magic Bullet Records. I've never interviewed Brent, I don't think. I've spoken to him a couple of times. We had pleasant interactions, I believe, and he's put out some Integrity records, which I really like. And I didn't even think of this, but someone else in the comment section pointed this out. Magic Pole Records has put out several Charles Manson records, you know, and Charles Manson is either a murderer, or if he's not a murderer, then he's the next step to a murderer, and he's a pretty bad guy. Why is it okay to put out Charles Manson records, but not Zek's records, you know? I mean, certain, well, not, let's just assume the guy did sexually assault people, that's pretty bad. But so is, you know, convincing five people to break into a house and kill a pregnant woman and kill the baby in her belly too. That's pretty bad too, you know? So why is it okay to sell that record?
I don't have an answer to this.
Nobody's answered that, is
it? I'd like to change the subject because if we're talking about Magic Bullet Records, there's an easy out into a fun, whimsical land again because they have been in the news recently.
I talked about this last. Go ahead, John. Give us it. And I will say I don't dislike Brent. I like Brent. Yeah. He can be kind of a controversial guy. I think he and I disagree on a lot of things. I respect him. I don't even disagree with his Zek's decision. I'm just not down with the Manson stuff. You know, like some punk guys like love Manson and stuff. I'm just not down with that. You know, Stanford Sean, get us out of this sinkhole.
Well, if you'll remember, I'm not sure when this episode's going up, so this might be a while old now. It's a couple weeks old now, but it was news that Ted Cruz had liked a pornographic video on Twitter, and Magic Bullet Records was the account that kind of brought that to light, that noticed that and broke that out, which, I mean, I think that's hilarious.
Do you think Ted Cruz was looking at porno? Do you think he was looking at porno and he had a stray like on his Twitter? Or what do you think?
So his response was that, like, it definitely could have been him, but there's many people who run that account. Like, he's not the only person who runs that account. He's got like a whole staff. So he didn't outright deny that it was him. He just said, we're like, you know, it could have been a lot of people.
so someone's looking at porno on his Twitter account. I mean, honestly, like, people that they get paid to social media, I think they're generally pretty good with that kind of thing, and they wouldn't make that mistake. However, 55-year-old guys that, you know, are very, you know, didactic when it comes to their religious beliefs, that might not be too good with Twitter because they don't quite understand how it works or not good with the phone. I think it's fitting the bill, Stanford Sean. I think it's fitting the bill.
Especially if they're so emotionally damaged because their father killed Kennedy, right?
Listen, here's another. This is a wacky, fun story, although it probably wasn't wacky and fun at the time. Sometime last week or so, Pace University was evacuated. Somebody called the police, and they said, somebody's got a gun in the building. So they evacuated the entire campus. Well, as the police did some research, as it turned out, a student was in the bathroom, and I don't even know why, but apparently he was like looking through the stalls or looking under the stalls. Listen, when I'm in the bathroom, I'm purposely knocking at the stalls because I don't want people to think I'm creepy. And actually, in a minute, let's talk about the gym in a minute, but we'll get back to that in a second. So anyway, the kid was in the bathroom, and some punker was, or maybe metalhead, at some point, he was taking a shit. So he dropped his pants with his bullet belt to the ground, and so the kid outside the stall saw the bullet belt hit the ground around the kid's feet. The kid, I guess, didn't know what a bullet belt was, so he ran and called the police and said someone had a gun in the bathroom and was taking his shit. So the police evacuated the thing, and as we all later learned, it was just some punk rocker taking a dump with a bullet belt. And the police commissioner said, it's probably not a very good fashion statement. We're considering charging one individual with a fashion crime, but we're still conferring with the fashion prosecutor, which is a very dad joke.
I just want to say that bullet belt to the ground sounds like straight out of a new metal song.
A new metal song?
A new metal song. I don't know, or like rap metal song or something. That just sounds like
metal.
It's pulled
right
straight from the Disturbed playbook. Or something. I don't know. I don't listen much. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, just generically angsty enough in metal.
What always annoys me about bullet belts is they're supposed to look like bandoliers, I think, but the bullets are bolted together, so you can't use any of the bullets, so they're meaningless. You know, what I think people should wear is bandoliers with individual bullets so you can pull the bullets out. Or it's supposed to look like one of those, what do you call them, yards of bullets that they used to use on, like, cowtails. But they're useless, the bullets and bullet belts.
I don't think the point is to be practical. I think it's...
Yeah, ease of extraction of the bullet is not what you want to encourage with the belt.
Oh, and also, they don't actually hold your pants up. Do you guys know that?
Okay, well, that is actually
So it's basically just like a giant waist tiara.
It's
that a sash. You're wearing.
It's like Worf. It's like Worf. It's a sash. It's like Worf, but around your waist instead of from your shoulder to your hip.
Oh man!
Can waist this, tiara be the title of this episode?
Waist. Oh god, I should write that down. Yes. sometimes I don't write those down, and I have to struggle. Let's see here.
They do look pretty cool, though.
Tiara. As there was no threat involved in this, and it was just misunderstanding, and bullet belts are just inherently a goofy fucking thing to wear. This is entirely wonderful, and I'm happy the bullet belt guy wasn't actually turns out like charged with sexual assault, because that would really really bring this story down. But you know, given that that's not the case, this is super funny. Does anyone have a annoying punk belt story? I have an annoying punk belt story.
Let's hear it, Adam. Let's hear it.
It's not super dramatic or anything, but it angered me. And then afterwards, everyone was like, well, it was that place. So we were at Punk Rock Bowling in Vegas, and we were and I was wearing like a studded belt, like a triple studded, you know,
badass belt.
And at one point we went to see, I forget who, is the Briefs and someone, two or three bands are playing. The Briefs are one of them. And the show was going to be at like the House of Blues. It was at the Mandalay Bay. And we got there and we were at the door, and like the House of Blues security guy is like, he's like, oh, it's like, you can't wear that in here. I'm like, why? It's holding my pants up. And they're like, well, you could use that as a weapon. And I'm like, well, if I take it off and start beating people with it, can you just stop me? Because that's not my plan. Like, I'm going to use it to keep my pants up, as has been the situation all day long in which this belt has been keeping my pants up. And they're like, no, sorry, dude, you can't do that. You got to take it off if you want to go in. So I'm like, oh, fuck. It's like, so I'm less worried about like my pants remaining up. I'm more worried about like what do I do with my fucking belt now? And the answer is that I gave it to the Briefs. And I'm like, hey, Briefs, hold my cool punk belt so I can go see your show, and then I'll get it from you afterwards. And that's exactly how that worked. And I went in and I'm like, that was dumb. And then I think like Scott Heisel, who was there with us, was just sort of like, well, it's House of Blues. They're idiots. Like, oh, and all the Americans were just kind of nodded like, yep, House of Blues. And I was like, all right.
I imagine Adam.
I don't know.
I imagine Adam's moshing, and all of a sudden his pants fall down. And he's got like heart boxer shorts.
Yeah, I had to keep it together.
Well, listen, let's leave the wacky and fun realm and get back to Crime Watch. Tom Capone of Quicksand was arrested before a Arizona show on September 12. He was arrested for shoplifting, which is kind of weird. Quicksand recently reunited, and they've got an album coming out in a couple of weeks on FF, which is kind of a big deal. Quicksand is a long, I guess you would say, hallowed post-punk band with members of Youth of Today, Gorilla Biscuits, and some other bands. So it was quite the shock that the guy was arrested. The band played as a three-piece that night. Just today, the band released a statement saying they're going to continue as a three-piece and a hiatus from the band, but he's not kicked out of the band. Here's what they said. As some of you may notice, we played our show this past Tuesday in Phoenix as a three-piece. When we began working on new music in the fall of 2016, Tom wasn't in a good place health-wise. We wrote and recorded Interiors with the three of us. Flash forward to the summer of 2017, the record was done, we were planning its release and the corresponding tours. Tom was in a much better place, and the four of us began rehearsing for the forthcoming tour. We were happy to be playing with him again and look forward to the future. After a week of some amazing shows, the road has proved to be difficult, to be a difficult environment for Tom, who's headed home to work on his health. We wish him all the best, and thank you for your continued support, Alan, Sergio, and Walter. So it was quite a shock that, I guess, at first that he was arrested for shoplifting, which you wouldn't think a 45-year-old man would get arrested for shoplifting. And then, of course, I guess the real reason you can put two and two together. The question is the following. Lately, punk news has been the police blotter. Lately, punk news has been Crime Watch. should we continue to post all these like negative stories? Like, I remember when we posted the story about the No ID records, we got an email from some guy saying, you're not helping anything by posting this. And the question is, are we helping anything by posting this news? Is this news? Should we only post the happy stories? You know, what do we gain? What does society gain by us posting that Tom Capone was arrested for shoplifting and has health issues, however you want to define that?
Well, I think just to kind of stay updated on like the state of the band too, and I don't know. I guess staying informed if that's something that you're interested in.
So Stafford Sean, your argument is that fans interested of the band overrides the guy's privacy because he is somewhat of a public figure. I'm not arguing. I'm asking.
I don't know. I guess I didn't think that far ahead. But I mean, I guess there is a demand there. Like there's obviously reason to post it. We're not just like,
we're not being malicious.
Doing it to spite him.
Yeah.
Also, have we been following the decapitated saga on the podcast, or?
I don't.
Are we just kind of staying away from that?
No, we did talk about it. We talked about it last week or the week before. The answer is it's looking pretty bad all around, and there's no good ending to the decapitated story. You know.
Yeah.
From my end, like we're punk news. Like it's what it says on the tin. So if you're in a punk band or related, and you do something that is newsworthy, we'll probably have to make mention of it. Most of the times, if you're doing your thing properly, the things that you do that are newsworthy should be that you've got a song or a show or a record or something like that. Sometimes if you're making bad choices, it's because you shoplifted or fucking sexual assaulted someone or whatever. Right. So that's what we do. If we were just like, if we were a more generically branded music blog, then we could be a more generically branded music blog. And that would be that. Actually, but that's not what we are. So that's not what we're going
to
do.
Adam, you raise a very good point, and I hinted at something similar to this when we talked about the No ID Records thing. Is let's say a guy is accused of sexual assault, and I'm not even naming anybody. I mean, a band, Stevie the sexual assaulter. Let's say he is a sexual assaulter. He's accused. Do we have a duty to let the public know that the guy is a sexual assaulter? Maybe we do because we're punk news and we're helping people out. So if we agree that we should let people know about that, then how can we define, say, oh, well, sexual assault is a bad thing that people should know about, but shoplifting, we don't need to let people know about that because people aren't in danger. That's a very difficult line to say what is dangerous, what is not dangerous. So I don't think you can make that judgment call. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think the other thing, too, is that, like, we're not trying to help people out. Like,
well, what are we trying to do then?
Report news.
We're trying to inform.
We're trying to inform people. We're not trying to help people out. Now, helping people out is oftentimes the end effect of us posting news about some band or something like that. But that's not the goal. That's a fine goal, mind you. And I mean, for a lot of music publications, it's totally cool that like that is the goal. You know, I'm going to selfishly plug my fucking newsletter that I do at someparty.ca. You should go subscribe to it if you haven't, Punk News Podcast listeners. But in any case, over there, I'm not reporting news. It doesn't say I'm reporting news. I'm just talking about music. So in that venue, I would feel totally fine picking and choosing the things that I'm talking about because then I'm, you know, acting as a news reporter. But I'm Punk News. Like that's what we're doing. So yeah.
But is there value? I'm playing devil's advocate here. Is there value in informing people about bad things that or people in rough spots? Is there value in that? Do people need to know that?
I mean, people who are fans of the band want to know, like, the state of the band.
But do they deserve to know that? Like, let's say a guy's gone through a separation with his wife, and there's a nasty child custody battle. Do people deserve to know about that? Or do we draw the line and say, well, this affects his music directly, so they deserve to know about that, but they don't deserve to know about his personal life? You don't even have to answer. I'm just throwing out ideas here. I'm an idea man, see? Well, listen, speaking of happy news.
I'm just letting your thing hang here. I don't know.
Speaking of happy
news. Some good ideas.
This is cool. Sticks and Stones, they're reuniting for one single show in Brooklyn, New York on November 10. It is the reunification of the Theme Song for Nothing lineup, which is the first of their two full lengths. That means it's Chris Cataleo, Scott Hollingsworth, Osamu Kawahara, Johnny X, and Pietro Ventantonio, and of course Adam White and Stafford Sean. Who is Pietro Ventantonio?
Adam, do you want to take this one?
You guys don't know?
Talking about Jack Terrycloth.
Right, that's Jack Terrycloth.
Yeah.
And so they're reuniting for a single show. I know Adam White is a big Sticks and Stones fan. I'm a big Sticks and Stones fan myself, too. The reason they're reuniting is because Osa is moving back to Japan after 20-some-odd years. So they want to do one final send-off. There's an interview with Osa and Jack Terrycloth at Punk News written by an excellent reviewer. I mean, interviewer. I forget his name, but he did a really nice job on this article.
Ricky Frank.
And so you should check that out. Adam White, Sticks and Stones, I believe they have some meaning to you. Would you go to the show if it was closer to you?
Yeah, totally. I would. I mean, Sticks and Stones, I was not aware of at the time that they were around as a band, but they were one of those bands that when I was earlier in my punk news career and was doing a lot of reviews and things like that, was introduced to and was sort of blown away that I had missed them at the time. So Chunksaw Records, the label that the Balancing Souls guys run, I believe. So they're very well associated with them.
Chunksaw put out the double disc anthology.
So they went out and they put out a collection called The Strife and Times. That was a two or three disc? Like, it was a set.
Two CD, but like two pack CDs.
Yeah, there's like a two like a complete discography kind of thing. Actually, that collected.
It's not a complete discography, but it's semi complete.
Yeah, it's that style of release, right? So like chronologically, we're gonna pack it full of like all this band's stuff, and especially it was one of those releases we were trying to say that like if you missed Sticks and Stones when they were around initially, like this is what they were all about, and I did, and so if you've listened to the Bouncing Souls is a good example because they're incredibly influenced by this, and there's Sticks and Stones songs you can go listen to them and go like I could like draw like a one-to-one relationship between that and like six different Bouncing Souls songs that have that same feel, that same like structure in the chorus. Like, they massively influenced that band. They massively influenced like a lot of these, like a lot of Jersey bands.
Lifetime. And,
yeah, well, and see, the Lifetime thing is interesting because when I first started writing at Punk News, there were all these bands that other people were into at the same point in my life when I was into like a lot of ska and stuff like that. And they would go and they'd be like, oh, like these bands, they're broken up and they're massively influential and everyone loves them. And this was your Lifetime and your Kid Dynamite and your Jawbreaker and like all those kinds of bands. And no one talked about Sticks and Stones at all. Like, no one, like before the fucking promo CD showed up, I had not heard anyone mention any of them. Like, I've heard one, I maybe heard like the Bouncing Souls like cover one or two of their songs, but nothing before that. And you listen to it and you're like, not only was that band influential, but they were fucking solid. Like, the stuff that was on that, you know, that was on that collection, that was on those early EPs and albums that they put out, was all good shit. So, I don't know why circumstance never favored Sticks and Stones way that it did some of those other bands, but they were cool.
Their songs are generally melancholy and dark, whereas Bouncing Souls are kind of fun and bright, even when they're sad. Sticks and Stones, Adam, would you?
No, I mean, but don't compare the Souls, but like, why did they not get the lauding that your Lifetimes and your Kid Dynamites and your Jawbreakers?
I guess just location, and I do think Sticks and Stones is sonically a little bit more difficult than Jawbreaker and Lifetime. There's a bit more of a coldness, a post-punk to it, you know what I mean? Actually, here's my answer, and I could be wrong. I will be very literal with this. Sticks and Stones have a very cold sound. When I listen to Sticks and Stones, it sounds like Gang of Four or Wire to me. It's a very eerie coldness. Whereas both Jawbreaker and Lifetime, even though they have some melancholy songs, and not every Sticks and Stones song is, well, a lot of them are melancholy, but Jawbreaker and Lifetime, the actual sonic sound is more warmer and more emo-ish, where Sticks and Stones is kind of colder and more post-punk, if you will. That's my guess.
If I remember correctly, they're not like a... Maybe it's just one that I'm thinking of, but like there were like Police covers that were on set.
They covered Blondie, The Police, Bruce Springsteen, and one other one that I'm missing. Oh, Dead Kennedys.
So anyways, Sticks and Stones are cool. Did you gave the full details of this in the story here, the date and all that?
November 10th is this fire room at El Cortez in Brooklyn, New York. I will probably be there, so if you're there, come say hi. And tickets are almost sold out, too, so if you want to go, you should probably get tickets. This will sell out.
Yeah, so you should totally go to that. So with all that in mind, if you've never heard Sticks and Stones, they were cool. So we're going to play the song, Theme Song for Nothing. That was the title track to the release that was called Theme Song for Nothing. And you can probably pick up on the Strife and Times set, if that's still available. I don't really know.
Actually, it's kind of hard to find, but you can actually get their two albums relatively easily.
Yeah, so... check this out, then go get the rest.
Okay, and that was Sticks and Stones doing the Strife and Time. We just got a couple of last stories we're going to blast through. Here's one that I was hoping Tricky Ricky would be on for, because I figured this would put Tricky Ricky in a bit of a quagmire, if you will. Morrissey, he's released the first single from his new album. The new album is called Spent a Day in Bed. The album is called Low in School. It's out November 17 via BM. People seem to hate this track. Pitchfork hated this track. Most of the commenters hated this track. I thought it was pretty good, honestly. I really like my favorite Morrissey is Spiteful Morrissey. My second favorite Morrissey is Uber Political Morrissey. And here's Morrissey being uber political, and he's doing kind of his standard trick, which I enjoy. He kind of does like a crooning, unusual song, but he puts a very heavy political bend on it. On this one, he's saying that news corporations are funded by businesses and they make money off scaring you, so you shouldn't really focus on them too much. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, because being not informed isn't necessarily good either, which is what he's kind of suggesting. But I dug this.
Oh, I actually thought his point was like the other way around. Like, it was kind of from the perspective of somebody who just, you know, wants to be blissfully ignorant, so he spends all day in bed.
You know, you might be right, honestly. I might have totally read this song incorrectly. You seriously might be right. Adam White, give us the rule breaker here, the decision. Okay, I guess Adam was so moved by Morrissey that he can't talk. He's tongue tied. So anyway, Stavishon, are you down with Morrissey or what's it or what? Did you like this?
Track? I think I said on the last podcast that I was on, like, I think Morrissey's fine, but yeah, I'm liking this track.
Why do you think people hated it so much? People hated this.
I guess I could see people hate. Like, I don't know. It's definitely got. You know, Morrissey's never been a stranger to kind of more synthetic instrumentation. But like, it's definitely has like a stronger emphasis on like the synthesizers and just like, they're definitely very prominent. And you know, and they're not like as kind of smooth as some of his biggest hits are, I guess.
Adam White, I was arguing that this track is Morrissey saying that news organizations are funded by businesses and they make money off scaring people, so you shouldn't sweat them too much. Staffer Sean says this is Morrissey criticizing people who are remaining blissfully aware, using that argument as a proxy for not wanting to put in the effort to learn about the world around them. What's the ruling?
I think that Morrissey is trying to do what I've heard a lot of artists try to do right now, which is express the general outrage and frustration of having to deal with, I mean, let's just call it what it is, like having to deal with the Trump era, which is just fucking bananas by any previous measure, and there being no end in sight in this, there being no moment where everyone's just going to wake up and everything's going to return to sanity. Everything has just become shit and become crazy. And the sentiment he's trying to express there, this frustration with all of it, is a frustration that I've heard other artists try to express. That said, I am totally on the, I wasn't minding this song as I was first listening to it, but then I got caught up in the fucking lyric video portion of it. And I was reading along with what he was saying. And Well, I absolutely get and sympathize with what Moz is doing here, I've got to agree with some of our commenters that this is really seems to be expressed in like the most simplistic of terms. And I'm not getting the sense of Morrissey, the clever wordsmith here. Like it seems like a little bit too on the nose. And there's other tracks that I've heard like today by other artists that I think express just this sense of frustration and disempowerment with the direction that the world is going in far more interesting ways. I could name them So on the one hand, like I'm cool to hear this record and everything like that, but this might be kind of dumb.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was punchy, concise, well put, kind of punk rock. What I think people continually ignore about Morrissey is how punk rock he is, and that he's making a very punk rock political statement. He talks about how he hates the police. He's talking about how he might be talking about how much he hates the government or whatnot. Very punk rock. You don't hear these kinds of guys saying this, and I enjoy the fact that he's saying it so boldly and so clearly, and he's not necessarily trying to mask it behind a certain faux cleverness that, oh, I can say this in a more gentle or a more delicate way. He's saying it directly, which I enjoy. Different strokes for different folks. Speaking of a guy – oh, go ahead, Stan, for Sean.
No, yeah. I mean, I feel like I kind of agreed with Adam's sentiment on the first listen, but depending on what Morrissey's actual intention was, I think that blow was definitely softened if you read it as kind of a sarcastic song. If he's playing a character and he's not just like straight up saying these really like just flat out, you know, bland straight up statements.
I'd really like to just follow up that with the my repeated urging of the music universe to stop with the fucking lyric videos, because it does no one any favor. It takes whatever the song was meant to be, and it retards it. It expresses it in a way that it was not meant to be expressed, and that even the printed lyrics in liner notes don't seem to do this level of disservice to it. And the video that actually came out with this Morrissey song is particularly egregious in this, in that, so it's done a little bit on the cheap. They're not trying to do what you normally see in these lyric videos, where they're just bombarding you with goofy shit fonts and stuff like that are flying all over the screen. They actually just have the lyrics scrolling at a constant speed throughout the video in a way that like, if you were actually trying to use it for, say, like karaoke purposes, like, you know, like in karaoke, they'll have like the lyrics appear and they'll, you know, change their color as they're showing you sort of which word you should be on. If you were using this for karaoke, it would be really horrible for that, because there's absolutely no pacing or anything to how those lyrics are being displayed. So they're just sort of scrolling by, and then because you can see the lyrics coming up that he hasn't yet got to, it completely deflates some of the power that he has in his vocals, which is like, Morrissey's an incredibly operatic singer, and he'll take something that is, you know, three or four words that maybe to another vocalist are going to have, you know, five syllables in them, and Morrissey is going to add like nine syllables and then like an oh or something to it, right? and that, but that's sort of like, that's the Morrissey that everyone loves. And when you go and you just like, as he's, instead of just hearing those lyrics when they're supposed to happen in the song at the moment when Morrissey decided they were going to happen, you know those lyrics are coming and you've already read them and mentally processed them. So then by the time he gets into it and then says them, then I'm like, well, okay, well, what you just said there was actually sort of dumb, because I've just read it and I thought it was kind of dumb when I read it. And the fact that you've gone and emoted through it has not made it less dumb. If I were to listen to this song without the little scrolly lyrics thing, I would be going from like a D to a B plus. Like, it took me out of it. Yeah. Like, it took me out of it that much that by the end of it, I was just like, it's like, fuck, man. Like, I hate this. Like, it's really, it's bothering me having to consume music with that scrolly text accompaniment with it. It just drove me crazy. Right. And it made me go and it made me take the lyrics of this song and what he was saying and not appreciate them, say, as they were delivered, but made me analyze them as I was reading them. And I think that if I was looking at it strictly based on the delivery of the artist, my impression would be totally different than me reading them a few seconds before the artist went and delivered them, and then me back analyzing whether he delivered them in a way that I thought was ridiculous or not. Like, especially for someone like Morrissey that lives on those goofy flourishes as he's singing. You can't do that to him. It's like this video just like kneecaps the whole song to me. I'm kind of expressing, John, that I'm less negative on this than I came off on earlier, because my experience
real positive on this.
My experience of listening to this song was fucked up because of this dumb lyric video. I think if you have just like popped the cassette tape in the Buick and we just listened to it as we were driving around town, I would have been way more positive.
Is that how we consume Morrissey, Adam? We drive around in somebody's Buick.
We drive around in a Buick LeSabre, and we, yeah. Is that a car? Was that one?
Yeah, Buick LeSabre. Interesting. Track 12 is called Israel. Will Morsi solve the Israel-Palestine conflict? We'll find out.
I'm sure that's well within his abilities.
Two of them.
Another guy that likes to party down, Andrew WK. He's going to be putting out a new album on March 2, 2018. This will be Andrew WK's first real album in, I think, about 10 years. He's put out a couple of, I guess, unusual things here or there, but this will be like the first WK rock album in about 10 years. Two interesting things about, well, the first interesting thing is that it's his first rock album in about 10 years. I'm excited. If you don't, I mean, I didn't get Andrew WK for a while, but then I saw him live and it is just the most joyous, fun, bombastic, but not vapid. There is a profound, or if not profound, then at least significant deepness to both what he's saying and how he performs it. If he just said party, 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 let's party, then it would kind of be kind of vapid. But the way he performs it with such conviction and such energy and such excitement, that there is a certain fundamental truth to what he's saying. So is he purposely taking a fundamental truth and applying it to a vapid statement? Or is he finding, sublimity in the normal or the basic or the standard? I think that's what he's doing. I think he's very clever. And I think there's much more to Andrew WK than people that just write him off. See him live. He's awesome live. Second thing is, what's interesting about this is, within the past two album time frames, you know, in the 90s, they would literally announce albums a year before they came out sometimes. Like a U2 album would be announced a year before they came out. In the modern music era where nobody's making any money, it used to be 4 months. Now it's kind of down to 2 months. Like the Danzig album only had like 2 months notice. Sheer Mag was like 2 months notice. It's almost like a 2 month notice now. Interestingly, Andrew WK, he's got, let's see, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. 7 month notice. That's a very 90s time frame between album announcement and album release. I don't know if there's a strategy behind that or why they chose that or what. But also, long time since Andrew's put out an album. It'll be difficult for him to pick up from where he left off if that's what he wants to do, or does he want to do something new. But he's cool.
I just went and I just Wikipedia'd the Andrew WK discography here. And I was, like all good people, I was incredibly into I Get Wet. I was incredibly into The Wolf. Those two records were just like pure joy in the early 2000s for me. And I'm like, I didn't listen to either of the two full lengths that preceded that at all. I didn't even realize that they existed until I just looked them up. I won't talk about the Japan only covers records that he's also released, but like Close Calls with Brick Walls and 55 Cadillac. I have no idea what those even
55 Cadillac isn't even really. I mean, it's an album, but it's not an Andrew WK album. It's him doing spontaneous piano instrumentals. So, I mean, is that it's an album, but it's not what I would say a main album, if you will.
Yeah. All right. So to me, like in my mental, in my head canon here, Andrew WK released The Wolf and then he just vanished into a cloud of confusion. And I'm treating this record as the follow up to The Wolf because.
Well, the album is kind of.
That's as far as I know.
The album is kind of follow up to 2006 Close Calls with Brick Walls. That's what it is.
So, yeah, it feels like forever. So there was probably a time in my life when I tried to listen to one of those post-Wolf albums, and I think I have mentally blocked it.
He's got some great singles. He's got a track called Let's Go on a Date. He's got a song called Vagabond, which sounds like a Queen song, which I absolutely love. And he's got a song, I think it's In the Groove or something like that, which, of course, was on Punk News My Org mixtape. Thank you, Andrew WK. You're super cool.
All right. I'm going to have to go and dig into this shit because I feel like I've been missing out. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It'd be cool.
Yeah, I think Andrew WK is a lot of fun. He's always got fun music. I don't know, maybe I'll have to look into it for deeper messages because I've never really seen Andrew WK as much of that. I know he's like he's a huge advocate for I think he had like a whole campaign against depression and stuff, which is cool. I think he's like into activism. One side anecdote. Circling back to Riot Fest, they put him on at the same time as Jawbreaker. He was the only band at the same time as Jawbreaker, which I think is a cruel curse to bestow upon someone. But yeah.
Did you see the Mike D DJ set at Riot Fest?
I didn't, but I saw Slaves, and if you know anything about Slaves, their last album had a Mike D feature on it, and he came out during that song, which is pretty awesome.
And did he rap?
Yeah.
That's cool. Adam, let's wrap us up with the sad news. Take it away.
Yeah, so, I mean, by the time this gets posted, everyone should know about this if you've paid attention to the music press at all in the past little while, but, you know, we want to make mention of it here. Not too much commentary because, you know, you've heard it at this point, but given this story, it's due here. So Grant Hart, the drummer, co-vocalist of the legendary Minneapolis band Husker Du, he passed away on, this would have been on the week of September 14th. I'm not sure of the actual day right now, but he was six, and he was known to be suffering from cancer when he passed. So as a songwriter, Hart helped lay the foundation for what became known as alternative rock, really. The influence on sort of everything that happened in the 90s from Husker Du and from Grant Hart in particular, can't really overstate it. So he really helps take Husker Du from the roots as just a Midwestern punk band to a band that was internationally known and that created that level of influence by slowing them down, by making them weird, by taking them outside of that punk rock box and really really helping that band achieve something else. So after Husker Du fell apart, Hart performed in the band Nova Mob, and he later released a handful of solo LPs, the last of which was one from 2013 that was called The Argument. So I don't know, but we don't have too much to say other than like Grant Hart's one of these guys that was just, you know, was it an amazing band, and as part of being an amazing band, helped change everything. Was definitely like, was one of Husker Du's songwriters, which is, I think, is really important. Like, this was not just like the drummer, like Grant, between him and Bob Mould, there was tension. There was one of those, you know, kind of classic back and forth songwriting team tensions that is what usually makes a good band good. So that was, you know, if you were unfamiliar at all with the work of Husker Du, you should go get up, you know, your work's cut out for you there. Go get into it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have too much to say about this. It sucks. But that's
and quite ironically, yeah, or tragically, it follows just as Husker Du's getting a gigantic reissue of their early material.
Yeah, that was the I can't remember the name of it right now. We talked about it two shows ago. Fuck, it had a really clever name. Hold on, I will know it right now.
And
it was the Savage Young Du set. So yeah, that there would be a lot of early stuff there, and a lot of stuff featuring Mr. Grant Hart there. So, anyways, that happened. So just, if you are not aware of that, we're letting you know.
And also just noting that Bob Mould's statement on it was just very well spoken, very well worded. You know, didn't kind of beat around the bush and mentioned the kind of tension between them, but also just really tied it together. And I think, yeah, if you want like a good kind of summary of the significance of this, I think that his statement is definitely worth a read.
So yeah, so I don't know, John, you have anything else to go on this, or are we just going to let people?
You know, Husker Du is a legendary band. It means a lot to a lot of people, and not a bad legacy. You know what I mean? So I'm sorry that Grant Hart passed away. That's always sad, you know. So.
All right, so let's we'll play a Husker Du song, kind of push things off here. Then, so I'm going to play a song off of Metal Circus.
Thanks for totally jacking my song, Adam.
Diane. Was that your song?
Yeah.
Or were you going to play a song?
No. Well, it was my. Did you
already play this song?
Did you already play a song, or did you not already play a song? Well, I guess you didn't.
I did, but I thought you were throwing that to me, like, hey, go play a song. Do it then.
No, go ahead. Well, we can't not play a Husker Du song now. Go ahead. And I was going to play
something that had
significance,
so,
too.
Anyways, in honor of Mr. Grant Hart, then, we're going to play Diane from Metal Circus here. As I understand it, one of his earlier sort of songwriting compositions with the group, and one that really, I think, demonstrates him taking them from being, you know, quote unquote, just a punk band to be in something else. So anyways, this is Diane by Husker Du. Look up the history and lyrics behind this song, because it's kind of dark. So here you go.
Yeah.
John was totally going to play song there, but
we've got some real Husker Du tension among ourselves going on right now. What can I say?
All right. So anyways, if you want to write us email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Any other news? Maybe John, if people want to acquire a copy of this cassette store day tape, how would they do that?
They can buy it. You can go on the website, punknews.org, to see the store. You can buy it at the for sale that is October 14. But if you can't make it to a physical store, you will be able to buy it at punknews.org on October 14. So you can't buy it before then, but we have them all ready to go. October 14, you click and buy it. You will get it. Also, if you ordered a April Fool's Day tape, it will be on your way it will be sent out to you very soon. And because it's been a while, I will include another special gift. You won't be sorry. But if you're the guy that paid me via PayPal, send me an email because I forgot who you are. I'm really sorry about that.
Professionalism.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.